The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello and welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 812. I'm your host, Max Scoville. I'm going to do my best to keep this thing on the rails. I'm joined today by a couple of real snickerpusses, Brian Altano and Jada Griffin.
I'm the snicker.
And joining us from far away in the land of also giggles, apparently, is Mitchell Saltzman. Everyone's going to have a very serious, distinguished, good business-like time. We're going to have serious talks, talking about PlayStation, about video games. We're going to be very serious.
Yes.
Do some real journalism here.
So Max went to shoot the intro, and then he boffed it, and he said the show name wrong. And then we just laughed for like 4 minutes straight because we're good friends and nice people.
Well, yes.
And we still haven't gotten the giggles out. So yeah, that's what
you've been on the show in like 6 weeks or something, and you just decided to show up and just razz me. Oh, heavens. No, we're off to a good start. This is fun. Yes. Honestly, this is going to be, we're in a very strange spot right now because Gamescom is happening next week. Brian and I get on an airplane on Friday morning. We're going to be in Germany for 10 days. We're going to be scrambling around doing all sorts of crazy big time coverage. Sony is not officially in attendance. I feel like maybe they're going to drop some kind of announcement during this time period, but there's definitely going to be tons of big, huge, like, you know, cross-platform third party games showing stuff off. I'm excited. I hope there's, you know, cool stuff during opening night live. It's gonna be fun, but again, we're a little bit frazzled because of that. Now in the meantime, we do have some cool stuff to talk about. Mitchell, you got a chance to do a big, huge IGN first about Lords of the Fallen, which is definitely one of my most anticipated games of the year.
Yeah,
you two are both big time FromSoft souls like people, and I feel like Brian, you're not giving this game a fair shake. We're gonna talk about that. We're gonna get into it.
Don't put this on me.
I'm razzing you. I'm gonna razz you. I'm gonna get you.
He's afraid of the umbral eye.
Why aren't you giving it a fair shake?
What is going on? What is this?
Brian's afraid of the umbral eye.
I'll shake it fair. Don't worry about that.
Okay, we're going to get into that in a second. We're going to do that. We're going to have that conversation about that and then make sure we have a nice clean intro and outro so we can clip it out and make sense in some capacity. Before that, something that just dropped before we went live, a little tidbit of news, is some details about Spider-Man 2's accessibility features. And they added one really cool one, which I think is... it totally fits. Like, I feel like often, you know, people look at accessibility stuff and it, you know, it's like it doesn't break the game, but it changes the experience in a way that maybe like... like, I think Forza Horizon had this same feature, which was being able to slow down the gameplay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it just makes it so you have more time to do inputs and control it. And, like, controlling a car in slow motion is sort of, I feel like that's, you know, it's great if it makes it easier for people to play the game. That's awesome. But it also is sort of it doesn't make sense. In the whole thrill of the game is going fast, right?
Yeah.
In the case of Spider-Man, I feel like it is spot on because it's like having spider-like reflexes. Like, it feels like that, you know, it feels like that Quicksilver stuff that happens in the X-Men movies where it's like you're just, everything is going in basically bullet time. And it's, you know, you're still beating up the bad guys and stuff and jumping around. You just have more time to, you know, time your...
So, like, if you need the accessibility options or, like, you're a young kid and you want to play mess with it or, like, the game's too tough or whatever, or you just want to play with it like a cool toy, the idea of, like, slowing down combat seems really fun to me, and I feel like it's going to get, like, you're going to get some really awesome video clips out of that. One of my favorite things to do in the Spider-Man games is to jump off the highest point in the entire game and just punch a guy right in the face. Like, there's just... like, there's always you go to a place where there's like a gang and then you go flying down and you land, and if you can, you play like Floor is Lava, right, where you just beat up everybody, throw manhole covers at their face humanely, which apparently doesn't hurt them or kill them but would in real life, and then beat the hell out of everybody. So the dropping down like the speed to like 30%, and they're like, no. I love that. That sounds so fun.
I think it's going to be so amazing for photo mode. Yeah. Sony games are fantastic with photo mode, especially Insomniac games. Their photo modes are amazing. They're spectacular. They're all the other Spider-Man adjectives. And so being able to
neighborhood.
They're friendly in neighborhood.
Ultimate.
Being able to slow down time to 30% to like get some really cool shots with the photo mode is going to be immaculate. I cannot wait.
No, I think that's rad. I mean, it just sounds like Max Payne, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if they introduce this as just like a, you know, regular old gameplay feature rather than like an accessibility function, people will be like, oh, sick, Spider-Man mode, or like, you know, super spider sense, activate, like whatever. Like, it's, you know, it's neat.
I'll say actually Sifu is a recent game that kind of did a similar thing where they added a slow motion mode and it makes it feel like the Matrix. I think any game that has a counter system and like really good reactions to attacks, it's going to enhance that, you know, that feeling of being a real badass, because you're just like slowly moving out of the way of an attack, landing your own, seeing like, you know, the impact of it.
Yep.
It definitely doubles as more than just an accessibility feature.
Yeah. So it's great for like training. Like if you want to get better at like, you know, identifying the frames where you can and can't do something. Yep. I mean, it makes me think of like that, you know, in like training mode in fighting games where it shows you the actual frame data next to you. And it's you're able to actually, you know, keep track of that.
So. I want to slow down when I do that baseball slide underneath those shield sons of...
Oh, you just want a better view.
Yeah, what? Yeah, I just really want to get a look at what's going on down there.
I want to just really...
What are you working with?
I want to just really screw up in slow motion, you know? Like, you just completely botch a thing.
Oh, like the QuickTime events and stuff, when you just kind of plops on the ground, just do that in slow motion.
I love when Spider-Man... fails. Like, I mean, there's that famous like clip of where you fail a QuickTime event, and
that's what I'm talking about.
Three, where he's just like jumping into a burning building, and there's like bleh. Now, speaking of things that are flat, maybe flopping, I don't know. We got a leaked video of what is presumably a slim PlayStation 5. We've heard a lot of rumors about this thing, but there is a Twitter account called BWE_dev, which apparently is Better Way Electronics. Says they're a PhD candidate.
Mm.
I have questions, but they posted a video of someone just holding this newfangled looking PlayStation 5. We would show it, but it might be proprietary stuff that Sony would sue us for. I'm not even sure. It might also be fake. That's very much a possibility. We've seen this kind of stuff happen before where somebody's like, ooh, I 3D printed a Super Switch. And we're like, wow, it's real. And then it's like, no, it's not.
Right.
The odd thing is either this thing is incredibly light or this person did not. Or they're very, very strong, or it doesn't have any electronics in it. It could just be like a model of the case, because they're pretty much holding it and they're moving it back and forth. Like they're, I don't know, looking like at like a game box. Like it looks, I feel like if it was a full console, like it'd be a little bit heftier.
They're PhDs in physical education.
Yeah, sure.
What about the
gym teachers?
What were their
leaked electronics on the side?
Did their hands look real, or did it look like Midjourney fingers?
I think they 3D printed the hands too, just so they wouldn't get busted, so no one can scan the fingerprints using the back tracing technology.
Unreal.
Yeah. Or Unity. Not sure which. but no, like I guess here's the thing.
I set him up, you knock him down.
If this is an actual look at what the PlayStation 5 Slim is, I am deeply underwhelmed. I am like, I don't know what I expected, but I was hoping for something a little bit better. I'll be honest, I don't like how my PS5 looks. I think it's huge. I think it's ungainly. I don't like the weird wing things. I've been really tempted to get the new, like the other fins where it's kind of flush.
Uh-huh.
The fact that it just looks like Sauron's tower was sort of a cool novelty at first, but just seeing it, I'm just like, it looks like somebody melted a boogie board. You know, I don't love it, you know. I think it's a choice. I appreciate that Sony had some fun with it, but I also wish it was a little bit more, I don't know, just kind of all purpose in terms of design.
You can't tell from this artist rendition that we're showing on screen. I'm not sure where this image is sourced from, but that actually, those look like those.
I think Red drew this.
I think Red literally just drew this. If you're watching the video, yeah, this is Red. Okay, yeah, Red.
Yep, this
adding an IGN watermark.
Yep,
Red went ahead and did like a high tech rendering using MS Paint. Source. Okay, Sours.
IGN.
So as you can see, the original PlayStation 5 is a big hunky chunky old thing, and the new one, Red, you forgot the stripe. It's got a stripe.
Yeah, it's got a line in the middle of
it. Come on,
the
Red.
After, it's a horizontal line.
Yeah, the big thing that supposedly is the case on this is it's going to have a removable disk drive, which I don't know if that would be sold separately or if that's just a thing. If you get mad at it and you want to take it off and put it on a timeout or what, like, I don't know what the point is, but
so, I mean, I can tell you the point, and I think it's like, it's pretty cynical and ultimately anti-consumer. If you care about those things, which you should a little bit, but, I think that ultimately Sony is trying to funnel all of their R&D into one PlayStation 5 model. And that will be a all digital model that has a, optional hard drive that you can pop off on the side. The difference in the faceplates and
hard drive or disk drive?
Disk drive, sorry. Thank you for flagging that.
Uh-huh.
The difference in the faceplates on this one is that they're like segmented, right? So it's theoretically in like four pieces rather than two big ones that you can pop off and on. We just saw them starting to sell the
Spider-Man plates.
The Spider-Man plates, the LeBron James ones. Like, so they're finally dipping into that world, which is really cool because that's way better than buying a $500 yep. PS5 every time you want a new special edition. You get some new plates and a new controller, you're good to go. But with this, there's basically four plates, and the one on the bottom right would pop off, ultimately have like a little thing underneath that would plug in, and then you'd be able to buy a disk drive and plug that in there. So I think what they want to do is they are ultimately trying to funnel all consumers into being all digital, mm-hmm. because then they can get 100% of the profits. You can't trade in games. You can't buy games cheap or used. You can only buy games through their store where they get as much money from mm-hmm. you as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you're a physical game collector, this should worry you a little bit, because this is the biggest console manufacturer in the world right now, and they're moving towards a digital future sure. at a faster pace.
It's also, it kind of reminds me of the old HD DVD drive that came yes. with the 360, where, you know, it's an add-on. And I think ultimately, if you're like, hey, a PS5 is $400 without the disk drive,
yeah.
people are going to be like, yeah, I'll buy it. And then if maybe they don't want to spend an extra $100 on a disk drive, then that suddenly seems like a thing that isn't selling, and it just gets phased out, and then only yeah. the digital version exists. I don't know. Again, this is a weird leaked video that showed up on somebody's Twitter account, but it kind of has me thinking, like, what would you actually want from a Slim? Like, what does your perfect one look like, aside from that beautiful MS Paint drawing that you gotta look at?
I'm old school, but I kind of miss when console, mid-generation console redesigns, which I don't necessarily feel were mid-generation in PS, mm-hmm. in PS5, Xbox Series X just yet, were drastically different. I miss that, when it was like, I think back to like the top loading NES, right, which came very late in the console's life cycle and was sold like absurdly cheap and had a couple of problems with it, but that had a completely different, had that like dog bone shaped controller, it instead of having the big mouth that you would put games in, it was top loading, it had red buttons on top, and it looked interesting, like the GBA to the GBA SP, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a sleep, yeah.
The PlayStation to the PlayStation Slim, like the original PS1, the Pazone, right?
That, yeah. I mean, that's some incredible stuff, because it just shows how fast like hardware shrank
yep.
back then. Because yep. like, yeah, the original NES is the size of a shoebox, and then they shrunk it down to something the size of a small shoe.
The 360 that had the front face plates, right? And
yep.
the R rod.
Uh-huh.
And there was the Slim one, yeah.
And the Slim one.
Even looking back at the PS3, which is an interesting one in terms of life cycle, because that's the only one of Sony's that had three different
yep.
slightly, there's the yeah. super slim version. I love the middle one. That's the one that I had for a while. It yeah. was great. It felt sturdier. Like it was still heavy, but it wasn't anywhere near as big of a footprint.
It was more balanced in its dimensions. So
yeah.
it was a lot easier to kind of find place for it in your entertainment stand.
I was kind of hoping that would be the direction we'd be going here. And then I think part of the sort of appeal with that would be maybe make it a little bit more less oblong, I guess, less sort of elliptical looking, which is,
yeah.
you know, maybe, it, you know, I'll say it. I like the very boring shapes of the Xbox and the Series X and S. Like, they're just little boxes. They mm-hmm. they're unobtrusive. They're easy to put in, you know, assuming the entertainment center is 8 inches wide or whatever. If you've got enough room mm-hmm. to shove it in there, it works. But if not, it's like, it isn't you know, it isn't like this bizarre centerpiece. It actually looks sort of in line with other electronics you might have.
I haven't really had an issue with the design, but also my consoles are both behind my TV, so like I don't have to look at them because I have that space. So, but I totally understand for some people that have it as
my
kind
dog
of like,
is ugly, but I never let it in the house.
I also understand like some people like to have it to show off or what they want, especially if you have a nice collector's edition. You're getting these collector's faceplates, like
you want to look at it.
You want to look at it. It doesn't make sense. That's why I haven't bought any custom plates, because my consoles are behind my TV, so it doesn't make sense for me.
Well, alternatively, I don't think this would be a thing they do, because they just started selling, you know, custom plates. I wonder if they would try to make a version that is just slimmer and it still fits the plates still work on there if you want them to. I feel like that's probably not the case. It's Sony. They like proprietary stuff, you know.
Duct tape will make it work.
Just melt it a little bit. Get it kind of hot with the heat gun.
I want to say there was a mid-generation refresh of the 3DS where it split into two paths, and one of them was larger, and I believe it was the XL, and the other was had swappable faceplates.
Yes.
You remember that
one's gorgeous.
And that one's really cool, but it had a smaller screen, but it was like, oh, this is a proper slimmer system with a new function on it. Yeah. And it's hard to feel anything but, and again, this is probably cynical, but it's hard to feel like this refresh exists for any reason but to save Sony money on parts. Like I don't necessarily feel like the consumer is getting something that's necessarily slimmer or smaller. It doesn't look, I mean, you can hold it in one hand, which is, I don't know if I would feel comfortable doing that with the PS5 currently. The guy in the video is just like spinning it like this back and forth, and I'm like, all right, that's got to be a little lighter. But in terms of like the customization stuff on it, the face plates are like, they would, again, it's got a segment in it, so you'd need four of them. And like Max said, I think they want to get people in on a $400 PS5. They want them to not buy that additional hard drive, which I think that they would eventually over time just kind of discontinue.
Like Max was saying, yeah.
And they want people to go like, well, for $100, I could get a game and a half or two cheaper games digitally. And then you're locked into a digital ecosystem forever. Like I have a digital PS5, and all my library is digital. But every now and then through work, there'll be like somebody on our Slack will be like, "Hey, I have an extra copy of blah 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 on PS5," and I'm like, "Oh, I can't put that in my console, can I? With this, just sit next to each other and stare at each other."
It's an odd problem. There's a certain kind of level of like lateral thinking that has to happen, because we've had issues with like backwards compatibility, but the idea of something being a physical thing or something that is not actually there is like a different, different exchange rate there. What's your read on this? Do you care? Like, would you be tempted by a slimmer PS5, or are you just kind of like, as long as it plays games that kick my ass?
It really depends on the price. I think, you know, we've gotten to a point where graphics cards themselves have gotten so big. And, you know, I just don't know. The thing I would want out of a Slim would be that kind of substantial difference between like the PS3 and the PS3 Slim. Like, to me, that was the right step down. If there was to be a PS5 Slim, I wouldn't be interested if it was anything bigger than like an Xbox One X. Like, that to me, that's the right size for a console. Like, it's small, but it's also dense. It's heavy if you pick it up. It feels like they have to work some magic in order to get it to that kind of level where I would want to be, or where I would be interested in a PS5 Slim.
Yeah, if you look at like hardware teardown videos of the launch model PS5, like they pretty much used every tiny little square inch of that system. Like, that is stuff that's jammed in, and it's still huge. And Xbox did a different shape that's still huge, you know. And there's this Series S, which is like much like remarkably small, but also way less powerful than its big brothers, right?
I think it's just be like perfectly cylindrical and about 4 feet long, you know?
Sure, yeah. Just it fits right into any entertainment center.
Behind the curtains.
My PS5
make
rolled
a big
away.
Old egg.
Under the stairs.
But yeah, I'm with you, Mitchell. It's like, to me, it's like the consumer's excitement is missing on what we're seeing so far. And again, big grain of salt or slightly smaller grain of salt with segments in the sides and an optional hard drive. But if this is a real thing, I'm not totally enthused about it yet. I want, just roll with it. I want something that like looks different and feels like something I would like trade in my current model to get, which I wouldn't for this.
Yeah, I'm the same boat. I don't think I would swap up. The only thing I could see me is, like, I recently upgraded my office, and so, like, sometimes I want to play my PlayStation up in my office, but I don't want to have take my console up there.
Yeah.
So, like, if they did release a Slim and they had that with the optional disk drive, I might be enticed to do that just so that I could have that disk option on my second, because my main one is digital. 99.9% of my library is all digital because my partner has a physical one, so I think we have one physical PS5 game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's
he's like, you can't play this.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, that would be the only thing that would entice me to buy it. If I was buying it as a second console for a second location in my house, mm-hmm. This would also be good for parents that have kids and they want to get their second kid a second one, then they can do that if they want to.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm curious. Like, is that a reality that we even have of where there is, like, a little cheapo version that, like, when the PS6 is on the horizon, what is the little version that they have bundles mm-hmm. of it at Black Friday for $250 or
yeah.
whatever.
What's the little red Wii box yeah, or
the
whatnot?
Canadian only one that you yeah. can't do Netflix because you need a CD-ROM to install.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like I don't know how small can you make a PS5, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there'll be videos on whatever version of the internet we have in 10 years where people are like, I made a PS5 that's this big. Like in the same way, like people have working GameCubes with a screen on now that are like, you know, the size of a GBA.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm hoping we see something of this in the future. I don't know. Sony's been pretty quiet. We got that awkward reveal of the Project Q, and I think it's still being, we're still calling it the Project Q. And
I saw some like rumored like graphics of it today. Not like graphics on the thing, but like a graphic somebody made with it saying it was like $200 okay. or whatnot.
Did
so,
they give it a cool name or
no? It was still okay. said Project Q.
All right.
I mean, it theoretically, both of those products could be, I mean, one of them was officially announced. And the other one is allegedly in a leaked video. So I feel like they could both be fall launches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really odd.
Yeah.
That means
I think, yeah, the date they had for the in that this like graphic I saw online was like November of this year for the Q. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
Which
I mean,
fits.
Ultimately, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's like I have a PS5. I want games, but there's still that part of me that like wants something new, you know? Like I want to covet this like new gadget. And
to
I'm
be
like,
fair, like Sony's had a big year for just tech this year.
Hardware, yeah.
Hardware, it's been a massive year for them because we between the DualSense Edge, they had the Project Leo accessibility controller mm-hmm. coming out, Project Q, there's the earbuds.
The SVR 2.
The SVR 2. There's so many, like, what they're the how dare the
earbuds.
You, sir?
The thing you have sealed in the box.
Too. Hey, you know what? I love my PSVR 2. It's perfect the way it is.
Okay.
What to right, sit right, on the box? Right.
Do you have that behind your TV too?
No, it's actually right to the side so I can see it.
All right.
That one's in the backyard with the dog.
I see it better if you put it on your head. But anyway, Mitchell, the reason we asked you here is I want to talk about Lords of the Fallen. You put up a big, awesome, kind of crunchy preview. You got to actually play it. Kind of in a nutshell, can you just give us like a little bit of breakdown, like what your big takeaways from it were?
Yeah, so Lords of the Fallen, for those that don't know, this is a game that came out, God, I think like in 2014 or 2013, and it was one of the very first Souls-likes that wasn't developed by From Software.
Right.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of it was okay. It wasn't like amazing. But this new one is kind of going in a whole new direction. It's got this new, really interesting dual kind of parallel realm system where you play in the realm of the living Axiom, and if you die, you basically respawn in the same spot but in a new realm called Umbral, which is the realm of the dead. And in Umbral, there's like all, it's like basically the upside down from Stranger Things. It looks super creepy, and if you die there, if you die one more time in Umbral, then you basically have to do the Souls-like thing of going back to your dead body, recovering your souls, or you lose them for good if you die again.
So you sort of have two lives in a sense.
You but die, it's, you it's, die it's, twice, it's, as they say.
Yeah, you shadow.
Sekiro, Sekiro, shadows.
You
are kind
of a bit of mortal yeah. shell too, where you could like you basically would like
you had a suit that you
had your sad little soul with like one HP or whatever.
Oh yeah,
run around, and be like, don't hit me, whatever.
beat the pants off of a guy or whatever.
So yeah,
knocked out of your clothes.
You talked about this. This feels like a mechanic we've seen a lot. It's sort of, it can be gimmicky and it can be really cool and robust, but you sound pretty positive on how much it actually, like, you know, adds to the experience.
Yeah, it really touches every element of the game. There are, you know, for example, there are areas in Axiom that, you know, are barred off and you can't, you won't be able to find a way through. But if you hold up a lantern, which is your kind of your window to that other world, the Umbral world, you'll see that there's actually a hole in the wall in Umbral. So you can just keep on holding up your lantern. You can move right through it. And if you put down the lantern, you turn around, the fence will still be there. And then there are also areas where, like, let's say it's a whole river, like a whole river of, like, you know, neck high water that you can't go through in the world of Axiom. You can actually fully traverse into Umbral, and in Umbral that river is no longer there. It's just a shallow ground that you can walk on but, you know, it's always a risk going into Umbral, because in Umbral you only have one life,
right?
So you have to kind of, like, you know, weigh that risk of, like, is this something that's worth pursuing? Is this a road that I want to go down in Umbral? Because if I die, then I might lose all my souls or all my experience.
Which is like the best feeling in a Soulsborne game, right? It's like I'm risking everything right now. I could lose everything, but like I want to keep exploring.
Like, so when you're in Umbral, if you have your pants kicked off you or whatever, and you're running around in the timeout zone, do you find like a point that lets you get back into Axiom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways to get back into Axiom. You can find a bonfire, you know, the bonfire equivalent, which will automatically bring you back into Axiom. There's another thing, I think it's not a vested, I don't remember the name of it, but it's basically like a little idol that you can interact with, and that'll bring you right back into Axiom, but it doesn't have the benefit of, you know, giving you a resting spot.
Right.
And then there's also a mechanic where if you find a flower bed, you can use an item to basically plant a checkpoint that you can use, you know, for the rest of the time. But that item that you need in order to plant that vestige is fairly rare. So you got to make the call of whether you want to, you know, use it on a spot that, you know, is not that far away from a checkpoint that you already have, or do you want to hold on to it potentially for, like, you know, a stretch that's longer between, you know, the two checkpoints.
Are the flower bed ones, are those ones you create, are those permanent? Are those temporary? Like,
They're permanent.
Okay. So you can effectively create your own kind of checkpoints at these potential checkpoints at these specific spots.
I think it was a Eurogamer write-up that came out alongside the initial sort of reveal of the whole Unreal demo of this all. And it was like, there was a lot of like really cool details about the gameplay in this write-up. And then there was like some cool graphics being showed off, but I feel like they weren't really properly paired. And there's a bunch of features they touched on in that write-up. One of them, I remember they said that you could basically, I think what he's describing is the sort of the vestibule or whatever, where you plant in the flowers. Can enemies destroy that?
I don't think so. They couldn't, at least in my experience. Usually where there's a flower bed, there's not really enemies that are nearby.
Okay. They touched on something that said it was sort of like a portable bonfire, but like where you placed it was dependent, interesting. Which is...
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell, looking at this game and having played the first one, everything that's sticking out to me is that it's much faster. It feels
it's so much faster.
Yeah, the first one was like kind of notoriously heavy and kind of felt like the heavier side of like the old Dark Souls games, and whereas like stuff like Bloodborne and obviously Sekiro, and then to a lesser degree Dark Souls 3, but still there, were much quicker games. Even like with the roll I'm seeing here, the lock-on looks extremely FromSoft. Like, does this feel like finally like the cover song that is going to hold us over until the band returns?
I think so, honestly. I think, you know, one of the things that I really took away is how closely they've kind of nailed the FromSoft feel, and that's a hard thing to really nail down. There are a little bit of There are some camera issues, I think, that aren't quite as smooth as like an Elden Ring. Like, if you roll towards a big enemy, the camera kind of whips around to your back, and that's kind of a little bit disorienting. Whereas like in an Elden Ring, it kind of naturally moves around to your backside rather than just, you know, full on flipping over you.
What about the item descriptions? Are they cryptic and needlessly obtuse?
I'm going to be honest, I didn't pay too much attention to it.
Oh, man.
But it wouldn't surprise me if they are. You know, this is very much a game that is trying to get as close to, you know, that Souls-like feel as they can possibly get, but also doing a lot of its own very unique things. So it's not, you know, I would never call it, you know, a ripoff or, you know, anything.
It seems
close
like it understood the assignment, and it has like the whole Umbral thing really seems fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
Do the enemies, so if you're holding the lantern up, do enemies in Umbral see you?
Yes. So that's another interesting risk reward element of it. If you're holding up the lantern and there's an enemy in Umbral and it sees you, if it hits you, it will pull you into Umbral. So basically, it's an instant kill.
Damn.
It's an instant kill if it touches you. And there's even enemies that kind of, you know, present that threat where if you hold up a lantern, they're like birds in Umbral that are hanging on the ceiling and they'll make a noise. And if you hear that noise, you got to put your lantern down because they'll dive bomb you.
No, go for it, Jayden.
I was going to say, I was playing Remnant 2, this is a little sidetrack, but I got killed by a bunch of birds. So, you know, just screw them birds. I was going to say, Mitchell, me and you are very similar when it comes to our like combat game. We have a lot of the same kind of feel when it comes to these games. How's the combat feel like compared to like Souls, Bloodborne and stuff like that? Like, how does it like, does it feel the same? Does it feel like it's doing enough different? Cause like that was my biggest concern, like watching the earliest dev walkthroughs, was that I was like, it doesn't look like it's doing enough new in combat for me. How is that like after getting some time with hands on with it?
I think it feels really good. They do. I would say the big thing about Lords of the Fallen's combat is fluidity. This is a game where everything kind of chains into everything else that you can do. So you can do light attacks, chain it into a heavy attack, and there's a unique animation depending on like where you are in the combo that goes into the heavy attack. You can do a light attack, press the stance switch button to go into a two-handed stance, and then when you press the button again, it'll do like a unique attack in the new stance. So
kind of
seamlessly go from one-handed to two-handed stances. You can seamlessly go from like two light attacks into your left-handed magic attack. So if you have like a catalyst on your left hand, you can do, you know, slash fireball. Everything feels very fluid is kind of the main
That's
takeaway
awesome.
That I got from the combat of Lords of the Fallen.
And are we getting like a weapon like variety? Like, I'm not expecting like Elden Ring level variety, but like, are we getting all types of different weapons? Did you get a good taste for what we'd be able to wield?
I did get a quote from the developer on how many weapon types there are. I don't remember it offhand, but there's a good amount. And, you know, it is kind of that Souls-like thing of, like, there's a bunch of different weapon classes, like, you know, a claymore, a rapier, a dagger. And then within those classes, there's a bunch of different unique weapons that all have their own, you know, differences about them.
Do your swords get dull and tired, and you have to bring them to the blade doctor to sharpen them up? Like, and I guess that's like a mechanic I hate.
I think it's
games.
Called a blacksmith.
It's a blade doctor. I don't think there's a blade doctor in this game.
Okay, good.
I don't think there's any durability from what I've experienced.
That's great. I like that. You know, it's cool if you got the time to does it count as polishing a game to make things get duller and blunter? I feel like that's different.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a great mechanic that adds a whole layer of something. But if you don't have the time or resources to put it in there, just don't. Just leave it out. Just don't make it so the blades get dull. Sharp.
I don't like that. I like when the blades are smart, not stupid. I wanted to pick your brain about like the world design a little bit. Like, obviously, Elden Ring changed everything in terms of going open world, but like classic Soulsborne fans love that. You know, large areas into tunnels that interconnect and open doors and secret passageways and shortcuts and stuff like that. Did you get a feel for how that kind of flows in this game? How the world kind of opens and closes?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not like Elden Ring. This is much more Demon Souls, I would say, than even Dark Souls. Like, I didn't notice a lot of like interconnecting parts that kind of lead all the way back to like where you started. But there are the usual like one way shortcuts where, you know, you go to a door, it can only be open from one side. You gotta go around. When you unlock it, it's a shortcut. But yeah, I didn't really get the feel that it's quite as interconnected as like a Dark Souls 1. It felt more Demon Souls-y in that way.
A little more linear then.
A little more linear. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm totally good with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine the thing that grabbed me is I love the exploration in these games, and I feel like the Umbral Lantern hopefully scratches that itch and adds enough of a variety in that sense of just sort of being like, ooh, here's my shortcut. It's in a different dimension. Like, would you say that's kind of the case, Mitchell?
Yeah, I don't know if, because it feels like the Umbra Lantern is really more, you always have it. So it's not like something that you'll get later on, like you'll be able to use, and now you have a shortcut because you're able to, you know, illuminate a new path. I do think it is one of those things where, like, if you pull up your, like, there's usually a bunch of, like, blue fireflies in area that you can hold up the lantern to, and there will be something interesting there. So there's definitely that element. I think the really cool thing about the lantern and the, you know, being able to go into Umbral at specific times or just whenever you want, actually, is that there are unique treasure chests encounters that you can only find in Umbral. So that is going to be, I think, the incentive to explore, you know, while you have that lantern out. Mm.
What about costumes and dressing my little person like a silly idiot? Can I do that?
There was, so we did a co-op Let's Play that's going to be coming out later on. And they really geared me out. And there was a costume that made me look like Skeletor.
Ooh, what?
Like, nice. This is
awesome.
Yes.
I like that they're just not so subtly being like, here's a default build, just happens to be Eileen the Crow. Check it out.
With the Bloodborne hat. Yeah.
It's much the way of Bloodborne these days, but here is the Bloodborne
hat. But they know what the audience is hungry for.
Yeah.
I love that it's also like the first Lords of the Fallen, kind of clunky. Yeah, here's someone in like a crow feather cape doing somersaults. Is that zippy enough for you, kids? No, I'm very stoked about this. Oh, so you mentioned the co-op, Mitchell. Is the co-op, It sounds like the co-op is a little bit less obtuse than we've seen in FromSoft games. Would you say that that's the case? Or at the very least, you can just buddy up and just hang out?
Oh, you don't have to call your friend on the phone and eat a cursed fallopian tube in front of an altar or whatever just to go online? Interesting.
Yeah, no, it's super simple. You go to a bonfire, you press a button to make yourself visible to friends. They press a button to look for people that have a call out, and they just join their world.
And it's not something where, like, you know, you beat the boss and they have to like silently do the YMCA dance and then they disappear.
Nope. They're there as long as you want.
I love it. I love FromSoft. I love what they do. It's also sometimes nice when things are just a little bit easier. And
I know.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit more
straight. Now, all the online and in FromSoft games is coded by the people that invented friend codes at Nintendo. Yeah. It's like evil friend codes.
It is also interesting.
See if anyone will hang out with you.
It is also interesting in the co-op because one person has to be the host. So they're the ones that are making the decision of whether you should, you know, both go into Umbral at the same time or not.
Ooh.
And if the host dies, game's over. If the guest dies, the host can still revive them. So
interesting.
There's a couple of interesting co-op only mechanics as well.
Okay, that sounds fun, man. I'm really stoked for this game. I'm dying to see the rest.
When is this out?
October.
October 13th, I believe.
What?
So it's a Friday the 13th.
Spooky time.
So, a week before Spider-Man and a week after the Assassin's Creed game that just got moved up
early? I
have
great news. There's no way to play all the games coming out this year, no matter what date they're coming out.
Spider-Man's the same day as Super Mario Wonder.
Yeah.
It's
a wonder how they're expecting you to play these games.
Don't play new games next year. Just play the ones that are out this year. It's fine. So one of the biggest games of the year that I think is taking a lot of people by surprise, I think it also had a nice sort of 3-year head start, is Baldur's Gate 3. Jada, you and I have both been playing a bunch of it. Mitchell, you're playing a bit of it too, yeah?
A tiny bit. I've been doing it like a D&D session with my buddy, like a weekly D&D session. So we've had our first session last week, and actually tonight I think we're doing part two, so I'm looking forward to it.
How many hours have you logged? I imagine you're still pretty early in there, yeah?
Well, like two.
Okay. Have you done anything terrifically stupid yet?
I've had like the inkling of wanting to do something incredibly stupid, but the better part of my brain won over this time. I was going to throw I'm a barbarian, and I was going to do the classic thing of like, oh, all those enemies are grouped together, so is my buddy. You know, I take out three enemies, lose one buddy. That seems like a pretty good trade.
You can pick him back up.
Ultimately, I decided not to do it. I didn't want to make him mad at me, but the thought was there.
Jada, what about you? What's your?
I have done a lot of really dumb things in Baldur's Gate 3. The dumbest thing was probably, I think, my first or second day playing it. I found a crypt. I went into the crypt. I walked around the crypt. I perceived all the traps. Couldn't figure out how to turn them off or disarm them because I just don't think my brain was there for like figuring out the systems because it was still so early in the game. And then I found a sarcophagus that was locked. So I was like, I need a trap disarm tool for this. So I left, did a fight, and came back. I was like, well, didn't find a trap disarm tool. I really don't want to come back to this later. So I opened up the sarcophagus with my whole party in the room. Grease came out of the vents in the ground, filling the room. And before I could take the items out of sarcophagus and then put them in my pack in the 6 seconds, 8 fireballs, 4 from each side, came closing in, hitting me, the grease on the ground, triggering a detonation, and an instant party wipe.
That is a brutal death.
It was very brutal. One of my parties now lives in that sarcophagus.
These aren't too easy. They're too greasy. They got too much grease in there. No, I love...
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, Mitchell, you got to look out for the grease. This grease is...
it's
like,
everywhere.
Ryan, I watched like your eyebrows raise where we just kind of... Jada casually brought this up in a meeting the other day.
Uh-huh.
I feel like you've had like some very like... some brushes with D&D, but I feel like you don't fully understand exactly how dumb it is and how completely how much failure is not the end. It is the beginning of so much more new stuff. Like it is the sort of
that's the kind of stuff that makes me perk up and go, I want to play this game. I haven't yet, despite having been bald for about half of my life now. I do want to try.
What's the gate level for you?
I think it was probably my late 20s was the gate to become.
Okay, there we go.
So I've been trying not to play Barbarian because I feel like I always wind up playing Barbarian. Or always trying.
What are you playing as?
I'm playing as Pequin, the gnomish rogue, who is... I look like if...
You idiot. I need to point out that like there was a full year where Max would just draw drawings of this character named Corwin, who was just like a sick little British kid, and he would leave them on post-it notes all around the IGN office, and you'd be like, you'd open up a flap on a conference room table to plug something in and just be like, oh, you found Corwin. The man should not be let outside.
Corwin is named after a kid I went to middle school with who wore a purple cape every day and insisted that he was a mage, and he would try to strangle you if you disagreed with him.
Really? That dude's definitely playing Baldur's Gate right now.
No, 100%. Yeah, he's for sure.
He's probably one of the 386 who finished it on the first weekend.
I bet, yeah. I'm playing as Pequin the Rogue, who is, I was like, you know what? I'm going to really force myself to sort of think around or talk around my problems. Yeah. I have like a 19 charisma or something.
Okay.
And I'm useless otherwise. I look like if you put a fake mustache on Mark Zuckerberg and then put his head on a child's body.
I'm gonna let you know, Max, charisma is not the stat you should be leveling on a rogue.
Probably not. Don't tell me how to play my game.
I'm not. I'm just...
Listen.
I actually love that. I love the role-playing of it.
Okay?
And it's great.
But no, so I'm having a good time. The rogue...
My parents are fighting, and I'm just sitting here being like, poor Pequin.
Pequin is... Stop. He's really good at... Pequin is good at, like, talking around stuff, and I've had a lot of, like... I can pick locks like nothing else, and I can bullshit, like... with the best of them. And it's amazing because I'll wind up in these conversations where I do the most like ridiculous, like I will just bullshit people to the point that I'm like, oh my God, how did I do that? Like I had these like these goblins that were about to kill me and they're trying to shake me down. And they were like, give me $100 or a $200.
Oh, the ogres.
Yeah. No. They were goblins.
They were in the goblin camp, but were they bigger, fatter ones?
No, they were regular little guys.
Oh.
They were trying to... And honestly, they're like my height, too.
So oh, no,
like
no. That. Okay, I know
anyway,
what you're talking about.
The
yeah,
point is, they were trying to shake me down and get all my golden coins, which I did not want to give to them. And I lied to them, and I was like, I can tell you where there's lots more gold. And the guy was like, you know what? I'm going to ask for an even higher number. Give me 5 gold. And I was like... I basically tricked him into thinking that like 5 was somehow a larger number than 100 or 250.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like rolled the dice. It was like, just gave him this, you know, got a very, very good guess. It was a hit.
I did the same thing. So I'm playing.
No, so here's the thing. Here's where I keep screwing.
Uh-huh.
is I keep winding up getting this amazing, these amazing, just like, I cannot believe I social engineer my way through this, these win states. And then they're like, well, all right, I'll allow it just this once. And then I do something that triggers the, everyone to get mad at me. And then I have to fight my way out of it.
Do you, like, tell them your name? Is that why they try to beat you
pretty
up?
Pretty much. No, there's a part where you meet an owl bear, which is exactly what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And there's an owl bear and it's got a cub. And like, basically I'm like, this thing will eat me alive. This thing is absolutely going to mop the floor mm-hmm. with me. And I managed to like totally just like talk it down. Like I can also talk to animals if I cast my spell. And so I'm talking to this animal and I'm like, oh yeah, let me just rawr, 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 whatever it sounds like, an owl bear. And I like completely diffuse the situation. And I'm like, you wouldn't want to eat me. I'm just a little pequin of a scrap. I'm no good for you. And the owl bear is like, yeah, I guess you're probably not a threat. You're not worth my time. And I'm like, I can't believe that worked. And it was like, but just don't come around here anymore. And I was like, surely would never do such a thing. And then I like walked past it and found this, you know, treasure chest or whatever. And then I came back and it was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, ah, oh, shit. And then I killed it. And then it's like, its baby was like, and I was like, I'm like pretty cold-hearted when it comes to just like, oh, I killed an animal in a game. Oh, well. I was like, oh, no, I can't live with this. And then I like reloaded a save that was like, unfortunately, like 2.5 hours early or something. And I was like, ah,
I
killed that owlbear.
So I'll go backwards through your story. So I did the owlbear situation, but I ran into a group of people, which...
Killed the owlbear?
I did kill the owlbear.
How dare you?
I killed the owlbear.
Orphan that baby owlbear.
Hey, you know what? To be fair... I got in there because I was helping some other people because the owlbear killed somebody else. So I was helping them.
Who are you?
I am Talizara, a bubblegum pink tiefling wild magic sorcerer. And so I'm just casting all types of spells.
Also a Quarian?
So like I went in, I killed the owlbear, didn't attack the baby cub that was there. So somehow the baby cub just like stayed out of combat the whole time. And then, but... I didn't realize finishing combat would start a conversation with the baby owlbear. So my person who got the last hit was Lazel, who is my least charismatic member of the party. And so she just was kind of like grunting at this thing because I turned her into a barbarian. So she's just grunting at this baby owlbear, so I couldn't do anything with it. And basically the end of the result is now the baby owlbear is eating its mother's corpse.
No!
What?
Yes, I try to talk to it with speak with animals, and it's like it doesn't give you any. The narrator's like, it doesn't give you any attention. It continues to gorge on its mother's corpse, and I'm just like,
you know what you did? You made a Cubone.
I did make a Cubone. Yeah, 100% made a Cubone.
Yeah. This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
And then I'm doing a lot of charisma as well with my wild magic sorcerer. So I went to those goblins you went, and I did the same thing where I got to pay them a lower amount. But then I positioned my rogue. I had Asterion like hide up behind somebody, and then I just backstabbed somebody that was one of their lookouts, and then had him sneak attack another one, and then I finished the fight like that. And then interrogated the little shit till he gave me all the information I wanted. And then he was like, "You gave me all. I gave you all the information. Can I go now?" I was like, "Nah." And I smacked him down and killed him anyways. It was great.
I stealth my way into this whole village, and I like backstabbed a bunch of guys. I found a dude who was sleeping, and I just went up and like stabbed.
Oh yeah, 100%. Did you go in the barn yet?
Yeah. I haven't gone into the spider basement though, because I don't want to. But I went up on the roof, and I was like tiptoeing around, sneaking around, mm-hmm. and these guys are like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm a liar and I should be here." And they were like, "All right, the check's out. Just don't mess with us too much." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And then I think I had to kill them because I wound up talking to them again or something. But it's just, yep. it's so much fun. You can't see the bottom. You know?
It's a masterclass in like storytelling and just having all types of different dimensions. And it's kind of like Tears of the Kingdom for Nintendo fans, where it's like, "Oh, did you find this hole in the ground that led to this place and found this dungeon and thing?" It's the same kind of community building conversations.
Right.
And so like, it is outrageous that we got both. We got two big games like that already this year. Starfield is coming out in like 2-3 weeks, and that potentially has a chance to do the same thing. Like,
no, I feel like what I feel a like wild Baldur's year. Gate it is doing narratively what Tears of the Kingdom was doing, like physically, tactilely.
Yes.
Like everyone is solving puzzles differently, but in this case, it's like it's not that you glued some stuff together and made like an axe, like a giant
Gundam.
It's you lied to somebody and then seduced somebody else and then poisoned something else. And it's like, it's completely roundabout way to reveal the same results. And to the point that like, it's not even like if you say the answer you got, it's a spoiler, because you have to do so many exact things right to reach that point for that to even occur.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I
can't wait for it to drop on PlayStation next month, because I'm already planning on playing it again with my partner on a new character. And he's like, "I don't know if you're going to want to play with me." I was like, "I don't think you understand how I'm going to be playing the second character when I play through. This is going to be chaos."
Oh, yeah.
This next, like, I'm very tame. I'm playing on tactician difficulty. I don't know if we'll play on tactician when we play together, just because the enemies have so much HP and there's so many more of them. But like, I'm going to be chaotic. I'm just going to be picking up stuff and throwing things. I'm considering making like a barbarian halfling named Nom 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 that just tries to eat everything.
That's a good one.
There's just so many weird things. So that
why not?
Do.
Jesse Gomez from IGN's UK team posted a wonderful screenshot. He, you know, talked about how he's playing with his partner and how it was the screenshot. One of them is in the middle of a very serious conversation, and then Jesse's character is just wailing on the loot, just like and you can see in the conversation cutscene in the very background, there's just somebody just playing the loot. So you can do that, and I'm like, I'm so ready for that. Like, I'm just gonna, I might wind up getting divorced, but you know, it's gonna be a fun way out. You know,
yes.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to play this with someone else. It's just it's a D&D simulator. It's it's wild. I'm completely floored at how much fun it is, and I realize this is the most we've talked about a ostensibly a PC game on this show, but like, it's coming to PS5. Everyone listening
very soon. Yeah.
If you haven't, like, if this isn't on your radar, put it on your radar. It is just something else.
Even if it's like, if you don't like turn based, you don't like dice rolling in games, it just works. It feels good when you're doing it. And yes, it is a little bit slower paced than some other RPGs and stuff like that, but the payoff is worth the time invested. And that's the biggest thing, is like, give this game a chance.
Yeah.
Is there crossplay? Like, can your
so there isn't crossplay between PC and PS5, but there is cross saves.
Okay, yeah.
And they said that the PS5 when at the PS5 launch, it should be able to fully sync with your PC saves. So if you're playing on PC, you'll be able to take your character to your PS5 and play it.
Awesome,
no problem. Supposedly, that's what they've said. It's
what, 2-player split screen co-op.
Player split screen, I believe.
4-player.
Online, I believe so. Yes, yeah, so yeah, definitely 4-player co-op total. I don't know how many you can do on a console and play all at once. I imagine if you had 4 controllers right now on a PC, you could probably still do it. I just haven't tried it.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, no, I floated the idea of just doing like D&D double dates and just like me and my wife playing with our friends on there and just like, I don't know, having Discord open and just like,
yep. Yeah,
yeah, it's, I don't know, it's
yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I'm very excited for more people to play this. And also, I don't know, play it on my couch. I'm stoked for that. Yeah, a lot of stupid stuff you can do in that. Everyone listening, whatever, watching, please let us know, what is the stupidest thing that you have done in Baldur's Gate? What is the stupidest thing you plan to do? Yeah, how dumb can you get? Now, Mitchell, I want to talk to you about Evo. Evo happened a while ago. It's kind of cooling off behind us, but you were there. You were giving it your best shot, doing all the fighting spirit stuff. Tell us about how it went.
It went pretty good. So we actually have a vid doc that my buddy Ronnie cut together. It should be going up today, so it might be up already by the time you guys see this. But yeah, I've been doing this video diary series, kind of chronicling what it takes to prepare for Evo, and you know what it's like to be on the actual show floor. I have 2 episodes that are up already. I got a fighting game coach in Diaphone and Smuggles, and they really upped my game and really got me ready for you know my pools at Evo. And yeah, I did pretty good. I did better than I've ever done. I went 4-2. I lost in losers finals to get out of my pool. I was 1 round away from taking it. Definitely could have done it, but just didn't know the matchup well enough to really secure the win.
What is the minimum number of games you have to win to make it out of pools?
So it depends. If you don't lose a game, you only have to win like 3. Because you do like quarters, semis, and then finals.
In my head, this just looks like the Dragon Ball Tenkaichi Budokai qualifications, where like Goku and Krillin go and fight the smelly guy, but like there's more folding chairs and fight sticks.
Can you give us kind of like a pie in the sky overview of Evo? Like, I know it's a convention, but it's also a fighting game tournament with multiple games and tons of spectators who aren't interested in competing but just want to come hang out and celebrate the medium, right?
Yeah, so it's literally that. The convention floor is literally split into 2 parts. There's the competition part, which is, like Max said, a bunch of folding chairs, a bunch of televisions, a bunch of monitors, people playing fighting games.
Do people fight with the folding chairs? Because that's been a thing recently.
No, that's WrestleCon. and then there's the other side of it, which is the convention part. And there's everything that you would imagine from a convention. There's an artist alley. There are, you know, big booths from publishers like Bandai Namco, Arc System Works. SNK has a presence there. Capcom's there, obviously. And you can just get in a line and you can wait to play whatever fighting games are coming out. This was a big year because they had Tekken on the floor, Tekken 8. They had Project L. They had an SNK booth where you can play as the new King of Fighters character. Mortal Kombat 1 was there. So like in terms of going to Evo and getting to play a game almost like it's a PAX or an E3,
yeah,
this was like an unprecedented year, I feel like.
Yeah, this has been like a huge window for fighting games in general. It's insane that like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, and Tekken are all back within the same calendar year, theoretically. Well, not calendar
year. They got to fight now.
Yeah, they do have to fight.
Now, Mitchell, let's back this up. What was your game? What were you playing?
I was playing Guilty Gear Strive. And yeah, so I wanted to play Street Fighter also, but I'm disqualified from participating because I got a review copy. They made a policy where if you got an early copy of the game, you could not participate in any Capcom Cup events, basically.
I thought it was because of your rampant steroid usage.
What?
I'm kidding.
So left field.
I just inject Monster directly into my veins, and that was too much.
They did all those tests on you, made you turn green, your hair got orange, you start shooting electricity everywhere, doing somersaults.
Down by the river docks, just shocking people. So wait, if you got an early copy of Street Fighter, that means you technically had a leg up on the competition theoretically.
So it's a little bit of a bigger story than that. There was going back several months, like before Street Fighter 6 came out, there was a leak that came out, and a bunch of people were playing that, and Capcom had to come out and say, "Hey, if we catch you playing this leak, you're disqualified from any Capcom Cup events."
Oh.
And then I think, you know, to kind of keep it fair,
yeah,
so to speak, is like, okay, well, also if you're also playing an early copy that we gave you, you're still disqualified. Like, yes. In order to accept this copy, you have to also be, you know, not allowed to play.
You have to forfeit your professional fighting career.
Yeah,
basically 4 years.
I imagine it's
9 out of 10.
I imagine there's also like a lot more competition for Street Fighter 2. Yeah,
it was the biggest. I think it's their biggest prize pool this year, right?
The biggest prize pool. I think it's $2 million. $1 million goes to the winner. If there is a fighting game to get good at real quick, it is Street Fighter 6. If you want to, you know, try your hand at that prize pool.
What's got the smallest group of players? If maybe you just want to try to play the odds and maybe hope you can luck into first place by just there not much competition.
I think those are like the hardest ones to win.
Those are the sweatiest ones.
Yeah.
Because those people that dedicated community that is still playing that game, they are the best ever in this game. So like going and playing in those tournaments at a whim, like Melty Blood or Undernight, any of those like smaller, like a lot of the anime fighters, they have smaller like turnouts, but they like the players are the sweatiest in the best kind of ways. Like they're so good.
Now, Mitchell, I'm like curious, like what is, so when people are qualifying to like super professional like esports athletes, do they still have to like sit down in a folding chair and just like beat someone's ass and then get like
everyone goes through the same thing basically.
Are there celebrity players who like show up on the floor and everyone's like, oh no, and they've got like an entourage carrying like belts and boom boxes?
Well, like, I don't know about that, but yeah, like one of the really cool things about you know, going to Evo is like, you know, going through the Mandalay Bay, going through the convention hall and being like, there's Stage Jam. Oh, there's you know, Punk.
Yeah,
you know, all these people that you know from streams. Oh hey, Punk's right there on screen. It's one of those things where you know, you get to see a lot of the celebrities, so to speak, in the scene, and you know, it's cool. It's a good opportunity for them also to meet their fans.
So you,
I remember Punk actually. Someone was holding up a big sign that was like, "Punk is here." And it was like pointing right at him.
So you said you got 4 wins.
I got 4 wins, yeah.
What was, like, did you have a decent-sized crowd when this was happening?
So I would say the crowd that forms around your pool is usually the people who are playing in that pool, and, like, you know, the people that who are, you know, supporting them. So it wasn't, like, a huge crowd. I didn't have anyone super notable, I would say, in my pool.
Are the competitors, like, generally supportive of the people competing on stage when they're not fighting? Like, is the crowd cheering and stuff like that?
I think he's asking, like, about, like, the main stage, because there's, like, a main stage for that, you know, some of your matches will be played on the main stage, and you get a bigger kind of crowd.
Yeah, because one of the first preview events I ever did for this job was, a Street Fighter tournament. It was probably 4 at the time. At like one of the military barracks in San Francisco, and I just went into this gigantic place, and it was filled with like 1,000 people who were screaming at 2 people fighting on the TV, and I was just like, I went from not understanding this to being like, I totally get this. This is one of the most energetic places I've ever been in. This is insane. So I was just wondering what that kind of adds to like that the part where you're actually up there playing yourself.
Yeah. So like Jada was saying, most of the matches play out in just, you know, nondescript pools, which are just a bunch of tables, folding chairs.
They've
together.
Emptied the water out so they can fit more people in there. Yeah.
Terrible acoustics.
There are also main stages for each of the game. And those are, you know, stages with projectors. They have commentators that are watching and commentating over the games. And those are broadcast to, you know, one of the Evo streams. Evo has like four different streams that are going on all throughout the day. And if you get on, if you get onto one of those stages, then yeah, you got a crowd of people that are, you know, cheering you on. You've got, you know, people commentating you. My very first Evo that I went to in 2019, I got to experience it. I got to go up on stage to play against Tasty Steve, who was a very notable fighting game player in Mortal Kombat. I beat him. It's not his game, but I did beat him.
Is he one of the voices for Street Fighter VI?
He's one of the voices.
One of the shoutcatters, yeah. As well.
And yeah, it was just the most incredible experience that, you know.
What's the vibe like? Because I feel like people, you know, they hear fighting games, they think competition, but like in my experience, when a convention or event is like a singular focus, it's everyone's kind of energy is going in the same direction, and it's just much more camaraderie.
I think it's a lot of camaraderie. You go around, you see everyone's fist bumping, everyone's smiling, everyone, you know, obviously there's a lot of intensity. People want to win. But you know, never for a second did I ever have like a bad vibe throughout the entire experience.
That's so cool.
It was just a lot of fist bumps, a lot of pats on the back, a lot of hugs. You know, during Evo Grand Finals, there was a moment where everyone pulled out their phones and started, you know, waving them, their lights. Look at that. That's
so cool.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm.
There was the Chipotle reveal where everybody went crazy when they had their...
Oh, my God.
FGC people love their Chipotle.
Okay.
That's like the second major Chipotle reveal at a gaming event this year. The other was the Jeff Keighley's thing, right?
I think so, yeah.
You guys like Final Fantasy? What about Chipotle?
Yeah. Why not? Sure.
Being in the crowd for this event, you know... After, you know, the commentators would throw it to break, like, okay, we're going to break. There were people next to me like, all right, it's coming, here it comes. And then the same Chipotle ad would play on the big screen and the whole arena would erupt. They would erupt chanting Chipotle.
I love that.
Fighting game people love their Chipotle.
I love that so much. That reminds me, it was a PAX Prime like karaoke thing, and it wasn't exclusively PAX people, but a bunch of nerds were hanging out and doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And one dude got up who was not there for PAX. He was just a regular dude at a bar, and he started unironically doing Creed for karaoke. And everyone just started going, Creed, 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 Creed. And he was so confused. I think he was really happy about it.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that we were just completely, you know, kind of razzing him there.
Gamers, you can't bring us anywhere.
No, exactly. Except for Dave and Buster's, and we have a blast over there. Now, Jada, you saw... Gran Turismo.
I did.
Movie, not the game.
Movie. Yes. Felt like I was in the game.
How was it?
I actually really enjoyed it. Like, I don't think it's like the masterpiece, like the model to build all future PlayStation movies or TV series around, but I actually really enjoyed the story. I think once you get past the first 20-25 minutes, which has it does that very
the tutorial
kind of a tutorial.
They make you watch that like history of the automobile.
No, it actually gave you like the history of every kid growing up playing video games and their parents not believing in them and not like understanding what there's like it very starts out very slow. Okay. Like that. And there's a couple like very odd choices for visual effects that they put on the screen, like, and it's not like explosion visual effects, it's like, hey, I evaded the police, objective complete, and like bright neon lights like in the sky, like kind of like visualization. I was like, this is really weird, and kind of pulled me out of it.
It's like a shot in the trailer where it shows like the car like explodes into schematics.
Yeah. Diagrams. So that was actually really cool. I actually really liked that. And they did that a couple times in the movie. Sometimes it took while he was in the car, it took him back to like his chair at home with his steering wheel at home in front of his monitor. Sometimes it did. And then other times he was like, at his desk, and it did it with the car when he was racing and stuff. I actually really liked that. I thought that was really cool. David Harbour freaking kills it in this role. Like, he is fantastic. Yeah. Like, he nails it Like every single scene, he owns it.
I did the VO for a review, and I thought it was really lovely how they just called him out specifically as like just really just doing his damnedest to try to salvage just a bunch of like franchise plays. You know, like
yeah.
It's just whether it's this or Hellboy, he's really giving it his all, even if the product isn't necessarily, you know, top tier.
But yeah, I think it does a good job. I think the story is very solid. Obviously, it's based on a true story, so like there's a lot of, you know, obviously there's some wiggle room. There's not some non wiggle room. They tell you at the end of the movie that the actual person it's based on, that he was the stunt double for all the films in the movie, all the stunts in the movie.
Oh, all the stunts in the film.
All the stunts in the film.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Stunt double for it. So, which is really cool. So like I was really happy to hear that. But it does a really good job of building tension. It does. It's got some good humor to it. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's a solid 7 for me. It was a good movie.
I think that's what we gave it.
I think we gave it a 6.
Maybe
it was 6, but like I liked it a little bit better than I think our reviewer did, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. It vibed with me. It did make me want to go home and buy a full racing setup and start playing Gran Turismo. Like,
it's crazy.
Which is, I think, is part of the appeal Sony's hoping for.
Yeah, no, they want people to walk into the theater, buy this game, and buy a racing wheel.
I want to see the power washing simulator version of this movie, where someone just gets really into that game and you just get like a power washing business. And it's like a moderate success, you know?
Yeah.
Not a huge, doesn't become like a chain or anything, but you know, they get like 4 stars on Yelp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times did they say the ultimate driving simulator?
5?
Okay.
Is it weird that they keep calling it Gran Turismo?
I didn't hear that.
I just want to say it's kind of amazing that they did this and Twisted Metal back to back, and both turned out way better than they had any right to.
Yeah, what the hell?
Did you watch Twisted Metal yet?
No, I didn't. I was floored by I was looking at the review scores for it, people love this show, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'll give this a shot.
I finished my 3rd watch of it already because
what?
I binged it twice in the first weekend. You weren't here for these stories. Mm-hmm. I binged it first and twice weekend, twice in the first weekend, and then Yusuf hadn't watched
it. Does
it
have different difficulties or
yes,
something?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I did one with machine gun only. Did one with physical damage only.
Watch it with the Spanish dub and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Platinum it.
I did. I did get the platinum in it. They're sending me a plaque. It's Sweet Tooth's mask.
All right.
But yeah, and then Yusuf hadn't watched it, so we watched it together again over the last week. Justified. I'm watching that.
This has been a blast. Thank you all for hanging out and chatting. Mitchell, thank you so much for hopping on and talking about all sorts of cool stuff with us.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, Mitchell.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Miss you, buddy.
Everybody, please go check out Mitchell's coverage of Lords of the Fallen and also the vidoc on Evo and stuff. And
go watch it.
Mitchell, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Jurassic Rabbit. That's about it.
Go say something nice to Mitchell.
I'm also on Threads, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That one of those.
That's the review for Threads,
Blue Sky, Pinterest, whatever.
Blue Ski.
And you know where to find the rest of us. Thank you all for joining us. And I don't know what we're doing next week, but we'll be in Germany. So tune in for all of our Gamescom coverage. Please, we'll be very jet lagged, very weird, and we hope to have a good time. And on that note, beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.